Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here at PWTorchLivecast.com. Good Sunday evening, everyone. I'm Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, coming to you at the conclusion of WWE's first ever all-women's pay-per-view, WWE Evolution, and we are here to talk about that show with you, the viewers. So if you saw Evolution, you have some opinions on the show, call us up. 515-605-9345. Make sure you press 1 on your dial pad so that you'll show up in my queue that you want to talk and not just listen. So WWE Evolution tonight was a positive show, a very easy thumbs up show for me and for many of the people that I follow on Twitter who were watching the show as well. Just a quick rundown of the show, as we always do here on these post-pay-per-view editions of Wrestling Night in America. Evolution opened up with the tag match featuring Trish Stratus and Lita taking on Alicia Fox and Mickie James. Fox was a late replacement for Alexa Bliss, who was pulled from the match due to an injury that she had suffered. And in the end, the legendary women ended up picking up the victory over Fox and Mickie James when Trish pinned Mickie James. I think that finish was a little more obvious if Alexa had been in the match. Mickie James taking the pinfall loss here with Fox in the match. I still think the arrow on the meter pointed more toward the possibility of Trish and Lita getting the victory, but then it was a matter of, okay, who was getting pinned? It wasn't as clear, I didn't think. Trish and Lita both looked pretty good. Trish, I think, a little more so than Lita, but again, as I noted on Zach Haydorn's podcast earlier in the week on PWTorch.com for VIP members, and we sat down and we really went blow-by-blow previewing Evolution, that Trish was always a little cleaner in the ring than Lita anyway. Lita was never that smooth in the ring to begin with. So, you combine that aspect of it with probably some rust here. But it wasn't anything that I thought really took away from the match. It was still a pretty good effort from all involved and a nice way to start the show with a little bit of nostalgia with Trish and Lita. So I thought that was the right way to go. I'll also mention the crowd. The crowd was super hot for this match right off the bat in Newark, and I thought they kept up that pace pretty well throughout the show. There was some downtime, but it wasn't just this void, like a cavernous nothing. There was always some reaction. There was always some noise. So credit to the fans in the building for making this special event feel even more special. The baby faces going over in that first match. Then we had the 20-woman battle royal. Every woman involved in the match got their own entrance. The battle royal actually lasted a little longer than I expected it to, with Nia Jax picking up the victory and therefore a future title shot at one of the women's titles in WWE. Going into this match, I didn't really have a clear feeling or any kind of sense that one woman was favorite over any of the others. When it came down to Nia Jax and Ember Moon, I thought that was the right two to come down to, because I didn't really have strong sense that one would win it over the other. I think they were both good options when you got down to the final two, and I understood Nia Jax winning the match. I could have also probably made the argument for Ember Moon winning the match. So there were some memorable spots in here that, and really when you're talking about a battle royal, that's really one of the main things. It's not going to be heavy on the work rate just because it, with all the bodies in the ring, you're just not going to get that that kind of match. So I think if you tailor in some memorable spots, I think that's more important than anything else, really. So Tamina ended up looking good. She got some good spots in there, which you know, she needs, I think. And people will scoff at her getting the kind of push she did in this Battle Royal, but I think she does have some value. She looked a little more crisp than she has in the past. So that was nice to see. The order of entrances were Naomi, then we had Michelle McCool, Sonya Deville, Alundra Blaze, who was really fun to see in this Battle Royal. A little weird to see her playing a character that was such a small part of her career, although it was her career in WWE, so that tends to take precedence historically when you're talking about WWE events. Carmella, Zelina Vega, Kelly Kelly, Tamina, Ember Moon. We had Lana, Maria Kanellis, Mandy Rose, Molly Holly, Dana Brooke, Nia Jax, Ivory, Asuka, and Tori Wilson, and the Iconics came out last. They did some mic work, putting everybody down. They were the first two eliminated. And then we had the legendary Divas square off with the current day Divas, although Maria Kanellis is a little of both. She took the side of the legend status Divas or women in this Battle Royal for that opening salvo that was shot across the bow, if you will, of this Battle Royal. Tony Storm versus Io Shirai in the Mae Young Classic Finals. This was a really good match. Tony Storm picking up the victory. Triple H, Sarah Amato, and Stephanie McMahon coming out at the end to bestow the award on Tony Storm, as they did last year. As an aside, Stephanie McMahon did not play a large role in this show. She came out for this, and she came out at the end when all the women celebrated at the end of the show. But the show was certainly not built around her, or you know, her presence was not lording over this show like some maybe feared. I'll just get that out of the way right now. Tony Storm looked good. Shirai looked good. Both quitted themselves well in this match. I liked this match very much, as I expected to, because I'm a big fan of both of these women. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do in NXT. And I think this is the kind of moment, as I was watching this match, realizing that when and if either or both of these women make it to the main roster of WWE, this is going to be one of those moments, this match, that's going to be replayed in video packages about them. Because, you know, being on the first WWE All-Women's pay-per-view, but not being on the main roster, wrestling in the Mae Young Classic Finals, but still getting on the pay-per-view is a moment. And I think that's one that's going to be hammered home when they do come up to the main roster. The match that followed was the six-woman tag match, Sasha Banks, Bayley, and Natalya versus the Riot Squad. This was a good match. The babyfaces getting the victory with Sasha Banks getting the pin off of a frog splash. My fear here was they would do a Banks-Bayley turn. And seeing Ambrose turn on Seth Rollins on Monday night assuaged my fears a little bit here, because I didn't think they would do those two turns so close together, since they are so similar in a lot of ways. But that was my fear, as we would get that turn in this match. And then to see the miscommunication between Bayley and Banks that happened during the match, I thought, oh boy, they're planting seeds for that to happen a little later in the match, and it never did. So that was nice to see. It was a nice moment for the babyface team to get the win here, as expected. Pretty heavily babyface wins here on this show. If you count Becky Lynch as a babyface, more so. And this was a good tag match. Everybody involved here is pretty well skilled, so it was a fun match. Kairi Sane versus Shayna Baszler was next for the NXT Women's title, and Shayna Baszler recapturing the NXT Women's Championship in another really good match. The members of the Four Horsewomen, not named Ronda Rousey, were at ringside cheering on Baszler, and they got involved in the match to help Shayna Baszler win. So I expect this is going to be one of the talking points coming out of this show, whether or not it was necessary to have Jessamyn Duke and Marina Shafir interfere on behalf of Baszler to help her defeat Kairi Sane, or would it have been more fitting for Baszler's Killer Instinct character to really put Sane down by herself. I'm of the mind that I'm okay with how things went down. Baszler is, to me, the kind of heel that would welcome that sort of help, even though she doesn't necessarily need it, which I think makes her more of a heel than a heel who needs interference to win because they can't do it themselves. I think it's more of a heel to be able to do it yourself, but use that heel interference when the time is right anyway. So that's kind of my take on it as I'm processing this show. I'm certainly open to hearing the other side of it because I know there is another side of it that people feel that interference shouldn't have happened. Plus, you have to think of what is this leading to? Whether it's in NXT or the main roster, there's long been talk of the Four Horsewomen getting involved in some form or fashion. We have Survivor Series coming up next month, so they could be involved in something there. They could be involved in something in the NXT level where Kairi Sane recruits two women to help her combat Baszler and Duke and Shafir. We don't know. So I would assume that this is not just a one-off where these two help Shayna Baszler, and then they go back to the Florida Loop, and Baszler continues her run as champion. But we'll see. That's entirely possible. I have my doubts, though, on that. And then we had Becky Lynch versus Charlotte for the SmackDown Women's title in a Last Woman Standing match. This had the feel of an epic encounter between Lynch and Charlotte Flair. The last woman or last man standing stipulations, not everybody is a fan. I thought this was, and I feel like I'm repeating myself, this was a really good match. I think it probably would have been better without the last woman standing stipulations, but given what they had to work around, I thought it was really good. There's some differing opinions from the people I follow on Twitter about this match. Some thought it was really, really, really good. Some thought it was just good. No one is taking the complete opposite side and saying it was a bad match. Everybody thought it was good, but it's just what level of good was it? So Becky Lynch getting the victory, powerbombing Charlotte off the apron and through a table at ringside. This was a match where, sort of comically, there was at least one time, and I understand maybe more than one time, where Mike Chioda stopped his 10 count of Charlotte before she had actually fully gotten to her feet. So the match could have and perhaps should have ended at other points. I don't know if that would seem to be a Charlotte issue because she hears the count and she knows whether to get up and she knows that she needs to get to her feet before the count of 10. But regardless, Becky Lynch gets the victory. Ronda Rousey versus Nikki Bella was the main event, and this is going to be another hot topic when analyzing this show. The main event, should it have been Charlotte, Becky Lynch? Should it have been Ronda, Nikki Bella? WWE is always going to defer to the bigger star if everything else is equal, and Ronda Rousey is the bigger star. As much as WWE tends to protect Charlotte, as much as they see her as, really before Ronda came along, she was the A1 woman on the roster, but Rousey is that now. So her match is in the main event. It was for the Raw Women's title, and Rousey did end up getting the victory. She was able to fend off outside interference from Brie Bella and pick up the win. This was, in its own way, it was different than Becky versus Charlotte in almost every way, but it was still good match, and for Ronda's experience level, it blows me away every time I see her in the ring. And then you have Nikki Bella, who, and I've made myself clear on various audio shows over the last few weeks talking about Evolution. I'm not a huge Bella Twins fan, but she brought it tonight, and she and Ronda had a fine main event, a main event worthy main event to this Evolution pay-per-view. So easy thumbs up for me. But we'll take your calls. 515-605-9345 is the number to call if you'd like to talk with me, PW Torch columnist Greg Parks, about the WWE Evolution pay-per-view. And just a reminder, if you're a new listener to Wrestling Night in America, we are on the air every Sunday night. 8 p.m. Eastern is the time we're on the air on nights that there are not WWE or Impact Wrestling pay-per-views. When there are pay-per-views like tonight, we go on the air right after that pay-per-view concludes, and we dedicate the full show to reviewing and analyzing that pay-per-view, which we'll do tonight for Evolution. But otherwise, we look at the big shows in pro wrestling. So next Sunday night, we will actually be looking back at WWE Crown Jewel, which will be taking place on Friday on the WWE Network, probably looking ahead to Survivor Series in November, some of the other big shows, maybe getting a chance to talk about the Evolve show that happened tonight that ended up with NXT wrestlers winning two of their championships in Evolve tonight. So that's a very newsworthy show that took place tonight, and so we'll touch on that as well as some of the other big TV shows. Raw and SmackDown, the big happenings from there. Lucha Underground is into its Ultima Lucha season finale episode, so we'll talk a little bit about that as well. And my column this coming week will be previewing the Ultima Lucha Cuatro shows that Lucha Underground is putting on. If you're not a VIP member, pwtorch.com/govip.
Hey, if you're a fan of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, which you obviously are if you're listening to this right now, check out Solomonster Sounds Off. It's a weekly show covering all the latest news in the world of wrestling, from WWE to Lucha Underground, New Japan, and everything in between, plus listener Q&A, rankings, and more. Check it out in iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or download directly from thesolomonster.com.
That's enough for me. Let's go to the phones. The first caller is the 478 area code, which, if history is any indication, 478, we're talking to Darrell from Georgia.
How you doing today, Greg?
I'm doing well, Darrell. How are you doing?
I'm doing quite well. I see you riding solo dolo, so, you know, I hope you get through this night. Tonight was a great show anyway, and, yeah, you know, I always like to tell you sorry again for your Jaguar going over there to London.
It's becoming a weekly thing, Darrell. You having to call up and apologize for my Jaguars. So it's I'll just say last year was fun. Last year was a fun detour from the constant losing, but it looks like we're back on that wagon this year, unfortunately.
Well, you know, I have to call in every week after y'all beat my Pats. So from that moment forward, I have to.
I guess I have it every coming week.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay. But yeah, tonight was a very good show. I'm surprised by a la not them having too much hype for the show, but you know, it did turn out very good. The NXT title match was very interesting way to introduce the Four Horsewomen proper into the WWE/NXT world. One question to you would be, do you see this as a potential, maybe since NXT like to be the first to do things, maybe a all-women's War Games match coming up, just to continue on the rivalry between Kairi Sane and Shayna Baszler?
That's a good question, because that show is coming up. I believe it's the show before Survivor Series in November. The problem is, I think they've taped most of the TV before War Games, so that would make it very difficult to fit in
backstage
there. But I think if you were to do a women's war games match, I think it would, you know, the horsewoman being involved in some way would be the group that you would want involved there. My only worry is Jessamyn Duke and Marina Shafir, they're still very new to wrestling, and you know, they don't have a ton of matches under their belt. So there would be some concern for me for throwing them into such a complicated match where you've got, you know, the cage, you've got the match is going to be 20 minutes, half hour probably. And I think that's asking a lot of those two specifically to make that leap in that short amount of time, because that's not something you'd want to ask someone who's in some ways still learning the ropes to do.
I get you on that. I just know because, you know, sometimes if you go off of last year, when, you know, it was a bunch of different spots, and sometimes you can practice that since they are down there in NXT. They can practice the match. Plus, it's a spot fest for most in today's time. So, you know, you have people lay out here and there, and you're just trying to extend the rivalry until, I guess, when you can have Shayna versus Kairi, who's 2-2 against each other, have the blow-off match maybe at the Rumble of next year. So that's what something that I was thinking of.
Yeah, you know, you would assume, given WWE tropes, that Kairi Sane is going to get her rematch. I don't know if they would do that at the War Games event as the women's match on that show. I worry about them overexposing that match, but on the other hand, the matches that these two have had together have been very good. So I'm confident that they would be able to have another match that didn't feel like the others. But I, on the other hand, I am kind of intrigued to see who would be next for Shayna Baszler.
Yeah, plus, you know, they still building, they added more pieces to the rivalry. You know, they played up in the package tonight how they had the Mae Young Classic match. Then she attacked her from behind. Then she won
right.
the title. Then she beat her for the title. Now she came back and they added the friends help. And they also put a spotlight on how Kairi and Io Shirai, I don't know if I'm saying her name right, but they're friends. So she have her coming in also, who just took a loss tonight. So it was just a lot of different stuff that they added into it that you can see. They have a lot of stuff that they can work with, just so they don't have to give you a turnaround on the one-on-one match back over again in a few weeks.
Yeah, and I think that's – you make a good point. I think that's another good reason why, if you wanted to make the argument that the women should be involved in a War Games match, that the Four Horsewomen would be the right – group to do it with. They're a natural group. It's not like you're just putting four people together. You might have to do that on the babyface side, Kairi Sane recruiting some babyfaces to help her out or something like that. But yeah, that would make sense too.
Okay. Now, the second thing I have today was the Mae Young Classic winner, Toni Storm. I know she's going to be a staple, or maybe be a staple on the UK show, but I'm confused. Doesn't the Mae Young Classic winner usually get a title shot against the winner, the NXT champion? And would you like to see her stay in the UK division or come up and add to those high group of women in the regular NXT where you got Bianca Belair, Kairi Sane, Shayna Baszler, and you put her in there also, and they have another like six big women like they haven't had since when they had the original Four Horsewomen and everybody there.
Yeah, the Mae Young Classic Finals, I don't know if that will get Toni Storm a title shot at Baszler. I don't know if it'll get her a title shot at Rhea Ripley, who is the NXT UK Women's Champion. Selfishly, I'd like to see Toni Storm in the American version of the NXT just because the talent pool is deeper there. and there's a wider variety of opponents for Toni Storm to face there, and I think she would really shine in NXT. I think it really depends on WWE's goal for the UK version of NXT. You know, they've already taped a number of weeks of episodes for that show. They won't have to run another taping for a while. They weren't able to get on television in the UK, which was their goal. So now they're sort of throwing the episodes on the WWE Network. So we don't know after this taping cycle is aired, are they going to do another taping just for the WWE Network, or are they going to hold off and try to get on UK television again? They're probably not going to run NXT UK only house shows, so there's a lot of time here where Toni Storm could be in NXT. Maybe she'll wrestle in NXT and NXT UK. So it's so early in this NXT UK brand, we haven't really got a feel for where the wrestlers are going to be. Are they going to be? Is it going to be a hard brand separation, or are they going to be able to travel between brands? I don't know. I would prefer to see Storm on, for lack of a better term, regular NXT TV.
Me too, Greg. I'm selfish like you. I would love to see her on NXT America, especially since she's young. Then you got Bianca Belair, who's young, who's undefeated. And maybe there's a potential replacements for Kairi Sane and Shayna Baszler, because usually NXT usually have a great woman's rivalry always coming up. So I see those two maybe as potential rivals for the title and stuff like that. So hopefully they do, they figure it out and they do something to it. Now, another question would be about the SmackDown Women's title. We've seen Becky Lynch get the title win. She was major pop for her the whole night, especially once she won and stuff like that. They got her as a heel character. I guess they looking past the Charlotte stuff and all of that. So maybe we get something different. So my question to you is, who would be the next challenger for Becky Lynch? Maybe it's Asuka, who was the only SmackDown woman left in the final four of that women's tournament, Royal Rumble, or however they do it, because it's not a Royal Rumble. They didn't get called out as entry. But maybe it's her next, or who do you see facing Becky Lynch?
Yeah, Asuka is at the top of the list, but I just don't know if WWE sees her at that level at this point, you know. So I think she would make the most sense as a challenger that people would see as credible to Becky Lynch, because you know the fans love Becky; they think she's unbeatable at this point. And I think as much as this feud with Charlotte has been booked backward, I think it did a lot to help Becky get over that hump of fans taking her seriously as the top woman on SmackDown. And to me, Asuka's the only one out there who I think fans would believe is seriously challenging for Lynch's title. I mean, you look at who else is out there. Naomi could do it. I think that there would be some good matches there, but Naomi hasn't really been pushed. So she would be coming from nowhere really to challenge Becky Lynch, and I don't know if people would really believe that she had a chance to knock Becky Lynch off for the SmackDown Women's title. Carmella's now a babyface. You could try her, but you know I think fans have the memory of her and as SmackDown Women's champion and still a bit of a sour taste in some fans' mouths, as much as she is getting over as a babyface. So I think you kind of want to leave her in the background for a little while longer before you give her another title shot. So you know, the ones I'm thinking of are really Naomi and Asuka, and I would go with Asuka. I think you could make the best case for her challenging Becky Lynch next.
Could you use Naomi as a building tool to build up to Asuka coming in and saving the day since they have her and Naomi friends? Becky Lynch bully on Naomi, beat her up, yeah. But they want her to eventually be a heel anyway, and they trying to make her a heel, have her go out there and beat up on Naomi, and where Oscar has to come and make the save. And let's see how do Becky stay the baby face when she's faced against somebody who's like Oscar, who's not seen like Charlotte as someone who's over pushed and something like that, and who most majority of fans we can say like Oscar. So let's see, do the fans sway one way or not by having just a real good match where maybe she has to battle back and she battling for a friend who was taken out by Becky Lynch, and just use that to build up the story potentially for them to face each other, maybe not at Survivor Series, but maybe TLC or at the Rumble, because I think it's too short of a time to be building up for women title matches at Survivor Series, which I think might not have a woman's title match on the show.
Yeah, sure, you can do it that way. I don't think you need to use Naomi to get Asuka to challenge Becky Lynch. I think Asuka's got a pretty good case herself as a, you know, as a former champion and as a longtime undefeated in NXT and then on the main roster. I think she's got a case to challenge Becky Lynch without using Naomi as sort of bait there in that scenario. But on the other hand, like you said, Daryl, if you're WWE and you really are pushing this Becky Lynch heel experiment and really want to continue to try to get her over as a heel, then yeah, having Asuka save Naomi from being bullied by Becky Lynch would be the way to try to steer the booze toward Becky Lynch and try to make Asuka more of a babyface figure in that feud.
Yeah, that's just something I would do, because we already know that WWE have a hard time telling stories. They might do something that people are intrigued one week, but since they book week to week, their storytelling is so off that it's hard for them to build genuine baby faces and heels. So that could be a way that they could build somebody to maybe turn Becky heel finally as they wanted to. But that's just something that I see. And last question would be, after this whole pay-per-view and everything else, which I think has been the best show in the past few weeks, was this pay-per-view right here, a real pay-per-view and not a house show, like the one before and the one that's coming up next week on Friday. Do you see them doing this show again and making this one of their rotation shows? If not, do you see them potentially showing that they can have more than one woman's match in the pay-per-view and maybe having a woman main event a regular pay-per-view, which would mean so much more if a woman main evented a Rumble, WrestleMania, or something like that.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't think you'll see this change how many women's matches are featured on pay-per-views going forward. I think there's always the possibility if you strike the right tone and if you get the right women in the right feud, I think it's always possible that they could end up main eventing a pay-per-view. But I do think Evolution will be a pay-per-view going forward. They may do more than one. You know, they may not just do one all-women's pay-per-view every year. They may do two or three or something like that. So that'll be something to look for in 2019. I don't think this is a one-off. I think it will continue this tradition going forward.
Okay, that's what's up. And how did you like the red carpet beginning of the show? Did you feel like that was too much and them over-exaggerating, celebrating themselves for giving this Did you feel like they should have just did it as a regular pay-per-view without all the glitz and glamours to make it seem like you were serious about doing this show, period?
I did not watch the red carpet, so I can't answer that. It's enough to watch a 3+ hour pay-per-view and then talk about it for another hour and a half or longer. So I generally don't subject myself to the pre-shows.
I got you. That's understandable. But
all right,
okay,
thanks, Darrell,
okay,
for your call
Greg,
this week.
All.
Look forward to talking to you again.
Yes, sir.
Darrell from Georgia drops off. We go to the next call. The 623 area code, 623, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Greg, this is Brian calling from Phoenix, 27-year Taurus VIP senior subscriber.
Excellent. Glad to have you aboard as a Torch subscriber, and glad to have you calling in here tonight on Wrestling Night in America, Brian. What did you think of Evolution tonight?
Overall, I really enjoyed it. Kind of like Darrell said, you know, maybe, you know, we have a house show, pay-per-view house show. I'm pretty sure I'm going to enjoy more than can we say Crown Jewel? Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'll enjoy more than that. But to get back to what you said, yeah, I really enjoyed the program.
Good, good. Any specific thoughts you've got for us tonight or questions?
Sure. Actually, the thought I have, I just have one thought, and I'll hang on and listen, is that the one part I was really impressed, well, I was impressed with a lot, but the crowd, I'm not sure, you know, was it sellout or not. I'm not heard or haven't even investigated that part to see if it was. And, you know, the way the lighting was on one of my Facebook groups, we were mentioning about the lighting looked kind of interesting, especially in the first couple matches. It looked a little bit darker than normal. So I'm not sure about how the upper, you know, I'm sure we'll hear about this, you know, the upper levels, how they were. But the crowd, to me, was hot almost the entire evening. Maybe a few small lulls, but, I mean, this has probably been one of the better pay-per-view audiences that I've heard in a long time.
Yeah, definitely. And it was a hot crowd. There was, from what I saw on Twitter, there was some differing opinion on how crowded it was. It sounded like as of a few days ago, there were not many tickets left at all for this show. And I don't know how many people ended up actually coming through the turnstiles to the arena. And I did notice the lighting. That was something I noticed in that first match, and I tweeted it out, just kind of curious that the crowd sounded so loud in that opening contest, and the lights were so low that you couldn't really see the people beyond the first couple rows. And then, you know, as the show went on, as people were tweeting about the show, you kind of got more of an NXT vibe with this show than a main roster pay-per-view. From the scaled-down set to the guardrails rather than the you know, WWE standard barricades, there were a lot of pieces to this show from a technical standpoint and from a production standpoint that were more NXT than they were WWE main roster. And I'm not sure what to read into that, but that was kind of the feel that some people got on Twitter, and that was somewhat of a talking point early on in the show.
I agree. I have two other things. First of all, I'm watching the replay in the background right now as we talk. I don't like to complain too much about missed moves because, you know, this is not, you know, a movie where they can stop and cut and then go back and retape or anything like that. And I know things happen. We're all human, of course. And they try to get things as tight as possible. You know, kicks can miss a little bit, but, you know, there could be some light. But, you know, there was several different times where I thought the refs kind of, you know, short-armed the count or maybe stopped the count when he could have had a three count. There was a couple times that happened. And then I know you mentioned earlier about Charlotte standing up, you know, what's the definition of standing up, you know, to stop a count or everything. So that was probably one of my other things. But again, you know, I take it being these are humans, not robots, and it's not a computer-generated game. So things are going to happen, some missed moves and, you know, some the moonsaults kind of, you know, don't hit exactly where they're supposed to hit.
Yeah, and I think the biggest issue that I saw that's sort of on the same wavelength that you're talking about was it looked like Alicia Fox missed breaking up a pin in the opening match, and that was probably the most glaring example of what you're talking about on this show. Plus, as I mentioned earlier, the 10 counts in the Last Woman Standing match, there were a couple of them that Charlotte didn't appear to get to her feet, and yet the ref still stopped the count because that wasn't where the finish was supposed to be. So, this was not a perfect show. There were imperfections, but that, you know, like you said, that kind of humanizes things a little bit. You know, this isn't a computer program. These people aren't robots. Sometimes those moments can add to the show to make you kind of appreciate all the moments when these don't happen, because you can see how difficult it is to hit those timing cues exactly as you need to hit them. So more accepting than usual on those, I think.
I agree, and luckily we're out of the era of you effed up error. You know, we don't need need that part anymore. So before I hang up on you, so as I was waiting for you to come on the line, I kept the network on, and it was a House Hardy Halloween special that kind of harkened back to the Broken Brilliance of Matt Hardy. And he played his entire character, and got some. We saw the Scribe, which I know is one of Bruce Mitchell's friends, and Senior Benjamin and Vanguard One all came up for that as well. So it was good to watch that kind of in the background, to go back and watch it, because I had the sound down, just kind of reading the closed captions. But it was, it seemed like it was pretty funny what they were doing.
Yeah, I think that'll be good if you enjoyed the Hardy antics in Impact Wrestling when he was doing this character, the Broken Universe, you will probably enjoy this, because I'm sure, unlike the Matt Hardy Bray Wyatt match that happened there, you know, you're going to have some WWE fingerprints on that, because it aired on Raw, and it aired in a very, I think it was the main event of Raw that week. So you're not going to be able to be as hands-on if you're Matt Hardy as you were with the character in Impact Wrestling. Now, with this, you and Jeremy Borash and whomever creatively, you're probably going to get a lot more leeway because it's just a special area on the network. So I think that this will be more geared toward what he did in Impact than the character you saw on WWE TV was.
I agree. And you know, the part I'll take with WWE on that part, again, it's their dime. I mean, their dime is their show.
Yeah.
If it would be me and I have this entity coming on to my TV show that I've got, you know, millions of people watching, I'd be a little leery myself. So I give WWE a little bit of credit, a little bit of lenience for that part. But anyway, Greg, how dare you? This is supposed to be a night about women, and we're talking about men. How dare you, Greg? I'm really surprised with you.
Yes, it was bound to happen. There was going to be something that come out that involved men. It's just it's a hard habit to break sometimes.
I hope you have a real good night. It's good talking to you. I tweeted that I enjoyed your with Zach Hadorn on his show this week, previewing WWE Evolution. I'll hang on and listen. I hope you have a real good night. And thanks a lot as always, Greg. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Brian, for calling in. Good to hear from you. And thanks for the positivity. Zach Hadorn's, Zach Hadorn's PW Torch VIP audio show previewing Evolution for about an hour, maybe a little more. We recorded that Thursday, and I think it dropped on Friday. So if you, for whatever reason, are listening to this and haven't watched Evolution yet, go listen to our audio preview of it and then go watch Evolution. Or maybe you watched Evolution and you just want to go back and hear our thoughts, and you want to hold us to account for all of our predictions that we made on that show and tweet at us. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks and rub my nose into the predictions that I got wrong. You're more than welcome to do that as well. 516 area code. 516, you're on the air. Please state your name, where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Dan. I was actually at the show. I'm in from East Meadow.
Great, Dan. Thank you for calling as a live consultant here on Wrestling Night in America. So solve for us the question that was brought up with the previous caller, Brian from Phoenix. What was the crowd like as far as numbers?
I would say it was at least 90 to 95% full. There were a few seats that I was able to see that were, you know, that were still empty. But for the most part, the it was almost a sellout.
Excellent.
I know when I was checking beforehand, when I was checking before the show, I still saw some tickets on StubHub, but and that's not a plug for StubHub, but I still saw some tickets available. But for the most part, that arena was pretty full. I took a panoramic shot, which actually showed that most of it was pretty full. There were no tarped off sections except for behind the stage.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Excellent. And the crowd came across, for the most part, as very hot on the WWE Network. So being there live, and I don't know what your previous live experiences have been, but kind of put into perspective for us what the crowd reactions were like throughout the show from being there live.
I was actually quite surprised as to how alive the crowd was. I've been to house shows. I've been to a couple of WrestleManias. I've been to a number of Raws and SmackDowns. And for the first ever all women's pay-per-view, this crowd was actually quite hot and kind of felt almost as if it were, previous callers had said, an NXT type crowd. With Becky, the crowd was almost 99% pro Becky. And
wow,
my 10-year-old niece even turned to me and said, if Charlotte wins, I'm running down there to punch her in the face.
Whoa.
So I'm pretty sure most of the crowd, if not all of the crowd, were pulling for Becky on that one.
Yeah, well, that's not a surprise given how things have gone and the crowd reactions that she's been getting on TV and at house shows. I can't imagine WWE thought any different here with this particular crowd. What do you think of the show? We don't have anything to hold this up against. This isn't a Royal Rumble where we can compare it to past Royal Rumbles or WrestleManias where we can compare it to past WrestleManias. What was your thought overall on the show? Did it exceed your expectations going in?
It exceeded my expectations. I actually was going in thinking that it would be in your average Raw type show, which lately Raw hasn't been too great, but I expected a middle-of-the-line pay-per-view. I thought it was, I would say, probably an 8 out of 10 because you had matches that were quality matches, and then everyone knew what the filler throwaway matches were, which, for the most part, the Battle Royal was okay. You got your high spots in there. You got your, nostalgia acts in there, and they were all, getting their spots in. You had a couple funny spots. The Iconics, we couldn't hear a single word that they said. The audio in the building was just awful. So we weren't able to actually hear a lot of what was being said, either in interviews or when the Iconics came out and took the mics and were speaking to everyone. Couldn't hear a single thing. But overall, I think that you had the NXT match, which was fantastic. You had the Rousey-Nikki Bella match, which was pretty good for what I expected. I just didn't think that Ronda at her level should be selling nearly as much as she had to for Nikki.
Right.
The Becky-Charlotte match was definitely one of our favorite matches of the night. I thought the Toni Storm match was quite good as well. And when she gave her that suplex onto the apron, yeah, I cringed right away.
Yeah, I think a lot of people probably did watching that.
Yeah. I think with the Battle Royal, most of the crowd was pulling for Ember. And I really don't mean to hear Nia Jax for the next 2-3 months talk about you know, that same sob story that she had been the first time around when she got her championship title match. We were actually kind of surprised that Asuka went out pretty fast as well. Mm-hmm. She lasted quite some time, but, you know, I was kind of surprised as to how long she lasted in there or how short she lasted in there.
Yeah, yeah. Let me ask you this. Since you've been to a lot of live events before, I'm curious as to what the makeup of this event was as far as the people in the crowd. Was it a lot more women? Was it a lot more kids and families than you would normally see at a pay-per-view? Or was it about the same that you would see it at a regular pay-per-view?
Honestly, I think it's pretty much it was the same makeup that you would see at any other WWE show.
Okay.
My wife wanted to throw in a comment.
Is that cool? Can I throw something in?
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
Oh, okay. Me personally, I actually feel like from what I saw in the crowd, there was a lot more diehard, dedicated, old school fans coming out for this, really, really showing support. And I dug that because there was a lot of throwbacks, a lot of old school, and I really feel like some really tried and true fans were out there showing their support.
Yeah, that's an interesting note. Certainly you had the nostalgia of some of the women coming back for the Battle Royal. You had maybe some people betting on some surprises unannounced that we didn't really get, but that was okay because what we did get was really good. I also wanted to ask you about, there were two matches on this show that featured women that have not been really main roster women, that being the NXT Women's title match and the Mae Young Classic Finals. Did you get the feeling that the crowd was familiar with these women, or did it take a while for them to warm up to them as the matches went on?
I actually think that some people were definitely familiar with them, but regarding being hot for the match, it didn't really seem to matter because if they knew them or not, people were still cheering. The group right next to me pretty much had no idea. They kept calling her Tori Storm, and I'm like, no, it's Tony. It's Tony Storm. But so they didn't know who these people were and were clearly cheering for Tori Storm, whoever she is.
Right.
But it didn't really seem to matter. People were kind of dead at certain points during some of those matches where they weren't terribly familiar with the wrestlers, but people were just hot the whole night. And I think it was just because it was New York, which is usually a pretty lively crowd, and being that it was a first women's pay-per-view ever, you had a lot of people that were just cheering because they were happy to be there.
I think that this definitely lived up to other pay-per-views. It definitely, where you had the vibe of like it's a women's pay-per-view, these matches were pay-per-view solid matches, not just good for women, just good. And it wasn't like you were just watching like the hair-pulling diva days. Like you saw some good, solid moves. You know, obviously, like with the Ronda and stuff like that, there was grappling, submission holds, but there were some solid moves and finishers in there that were really impressive. You know, obviously, you're gonna have like the squash people and the jobbers in there and whatever, but there was definitely enough room to hold their own to the point where it surpassed the point of just having like women's matches kind of being there in the WWE. They were really, really pushed themselves, you know, to the point where they held their own, for sure.
And that seems to be the consensus on this show, that this was not a really good pay-per-view for the women. This was a really good pay-per-view, period. These weren't really good women's matches. These were really good matches, period. And I think the days of having to qualify the quality of the matches by saying women's matches, I think those days are over, and this pay-per-view was an example of that.
Agreed.
So Let me ask you about the reactions from the crowd. Who was over, or give me one or two names who were most over as baby faces on the show, one or two who you guys thought were most over as heels?
Definitely Becky Lynch was the top heel, top face of the night. The crowd just pretty much erupted and
stopping. It's insane.
And Charlotte, I guess you could call her the top heel of the night, since everyone was completely pro Becky. But you had, I would probably say the other top face was Rhonda, but the crowd was kind of split 50-50, it seemed, for, you know, who they were pulling for.
People have pulled for Bayley too, in that triple.
Yeah, and the six women tag, a lot of people were pulling for Bayley as well, which, by the way,
yeah,
I even said it to my friend that I guess Brie Bella is now teaching Sasha Banks how to take suicide dives.
Because that was
quite a botch.
You mean Nikki Bella?
No. Brie.
Yeah.
Sorry.
When you say that they were cheering Becky Lynch, were they booing Charlotte as vociferously as they cheered Becky, or were they less interested in reacting to Charlotte as much as they were just cheering Becky?
I think they were more or less interested in cheering for Charlotte, but I would say of that crowd, 90 to 95% were fully cheering Becky, but they weren't necessarily booing Charlotte.
Okay, interesting.
There were definitely a couple blown. Sorry, go ahead.
If Charlotte wasn't the most, it wasn't even maybe on the top five then of heels who got a reaction. So, who were some of the top heels that got strong heel reactions on the show live?
I would say probably Alicia Fox, because she just was. I was kind of half hoping that Alexa Bliss was going to pull a swerve on us and, you know, tag herself into the match towards the end. But I would say Fox was getting booed pretty heavily. You probably also had Shayna Baszler getting booed pretty heavily. A lot of people were pulling for Kyrie to win, but she was getting booed. Trying to think of who else. Maybe the Riot Squad at best, but...
Oh, I was going to say when Lita and...
Trish.
No. Who was Lita fighting and Nikki James. It was the boo, yeah, when Lita and Nikki James were... was it Trish?
Right.
Trish, sorry.
Trish and Mickey.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay. All right, interesting. Well, do you guys have any other live notes that you'd like to share with the listeners or anything?
Tamina and Nia, when they...
The Tamina-Nia standoff, I'm hoping that's not leading to a WrestleMania pay-per-view match. We were kind of all pulling for Ember to win that Battle Royal. Mm-hmm. A lot of the, you know, older generation kind of were able to hold their own. Ivory looked really good. Michelle McCool looked fantastic. Alundra Blaze, God, she was in there for quite some time, and I was at 50-plus years old.
Shape.
She was doing a great job. It was funny, the previous caller had mentioned, you know, you were talking about guys coming out, and you were talking about, you know, men on a all-women's pay-per-view recap. My friend happened to notice that as the pay-per-view went off the air, all of the women came out, plus Triple H. So
yes,
he was like, yeah, of course. How better to celebrate an all-women's pay-per-view than with Triple H?
The show ended, and it was kind of a funny image because all the women were there, and I think you could see the NXT women coming out, too, in the back. And it just as they were signing off to go, they ended the show with like a video package, almost like a WrestleMania, a video package on the show. And just before they cut away from the live feed, Triple H was making his way around the side, and he was like popping out in front or trying to get out in front of the women. So like it wasn't enough that he would just come out there and stand to the side or stand behind the women and clap. He was trying to get out in front of the line of women. So I thought that was kind of interesting to see.
Oh, absolutely.
And I
kind of saw that he came around to the front and he was kind of almost trying to direct some of the women. But after it went off and they were all starting to head towards the back, this is when it definitely was off the air. You know, Stephanie and Rhonda almost had like a little bit of a stare down, and then Stephanie gave her probably one of the biggest hugs I've ever seen anyone give. And I was like, okay, breaking kayfabe there.
Yeah. Hey, when it's off the air, I guess anything goes.
Yeah.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
But I thought it was a fantastic show. My two nieces, that was their first live event, so they were incredibly happy with what they got to see. And I think, honestly, probably the match of the night for us was definitely the Becky Lynch-Charlotte match. I didn't really get to catch most of the Baszler-Kairi Sane match, so I'm going to go back and watch that on the network. But I also wanted to let Wade Keller know that I'm sorry that Uniondale let him down last Monday Night Raw that was in Uniondale, but I wasn't going to let it happen with this pay-per-view, so.
Well, yeah, Wade gets a little cranky when he doesn't get live reports for his post-shows on Raw and SmackDown, so I do appreciate you calling in here on Wrestling Night in America and sharing the live perspective of the show, because especially for a first-time ever in WWE show like this, I think it is really even more interesting than it normally would be at a regular pay-per-view to get that live perspective. So I thank the both of you for calling in and sharing your thoughts tonight.
Our pleasure, Greg. Thanks a lot, man.
Absolutely. That was Dan and his wife coming back from the Evolution at pay-per-view. We go to our last call in the queue, so if you do want to call and get on and talk about Evolution, 515-605-9345 is the number to call. But the last one in our queue is the 360 area code, 360. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hello, my name is Derek. I'm calling from Paulsboro, Washington.
Hello, Derek. Welcome to Wrestling Night in America. Did you think of Evolution tonight?
Thanks for taking my call. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a fantastic show. Almost kind of echoing everybody else's sentiments, sounds like. But the only, I guess, not complaint, but I would have loved to have seen maybe 10 more minutes on the Mae Young final. I thought that it was just starting to build. And then, you know, it felt like they were already hitting the finisher, you know, and I was like, oh man, they're going to end it soon. But I understand. I mean, it was lower on the card and, you know, there was a lot going on. And like what the guy who was there had mentioned, you know, maybe some people weren't totally familiar with, you know, the two. But man, I would have loved to have seen that go a little longer. But otherwise, you know, top to bottom was a fun card. Well, all the matches were really well placed. I agree with everyone else on the Becky Charlotte match was probably the best. Second being the Shayna Baszler and Kairi Sane match was also really good. I was actually shocked that that she lost the belt back already. I was a little disappointed in that, but all in all, really a good show. The only other comment I have is I'm wondering if maybe the top producers were already in Saudi Arabia, and they had the B team on the production, because I noticed quite a few production glitches that was definitely not something you see often on WWE shows.
Yeah, and that was, that sort of goes along with what people on Twitter have suggested, maybe that this was more of an NXT run show than normal. And I don't know if when they do takeovers, I don't know if that is an NXT production team or the main roster production team also does NXT. But just based on the setup and how things were lit and how, you know, the barricades and everything like that, it had an NXT feel to it. So I wonder if this was an NXT production team, if such a thing exists, or if this was just kind of a fluke thing, because you're right, WWE production usually is pretty flawless with their stuff. I mean, you know, Kevin Dunn's been doing this for 30 some years, so you rarely see that kind of thing, especially on pay-per-view. So it is something that's noticeable when it does happen, just because it's so rare. And I echo what you said mm-hmm. about the more time for the Mae Young Classic, because I think I tweeted that out too. Again, at Greg M. Park, where you can find me on Twitter, I tweeted that out after that match. I was like, man, it's rare in these days with 3 and 4 hour shows that we say, you know, that match could have gotten some more time. Usually we're asking for time to get cut from matches. So that was one that I definitely felt after watching it that you could have added another few minutes to it. And really, you could have taken off from the main event. I know that Nikki Bella is very important mm-hmm. in WWE lore. I know that I wouldn't say she's necessarily protected, but she, you know, in that circumstance, they were going to book her to look stronger against Ronda Rousey than maybe they would book some other women. So I understand them wanting to have Rousey more on the defensive there than maybe some other fans would prefer to see her. And because you're going to do that, the match is going to go a little longer. But if you chopped off a couple minutes from that main event and put him on the Mae Young Classic, I don't think you'd have anybody complaining.
Yeah, absolutely agree with that. It almost seemed like they were going to make it look like, and I think what they were going for more so than anything was, this is Ronda Rousey versus both of the Bella Twins. You know, this isn't just Ronda yeah. Rousey versus Nikki Bella. This is, you know, 2-on-1, and she's overcoming it. Oh, and the other thing I wanted to mention, it really seems like that they're pushing Asuka with the tag team. I mean, I keep seeing these tag team signs, and I read somewhere on, I don't know if it was on Twitter, on one of the websites, that, you know, some of those signs were supposedly planted or given out by WWE. We noticed them at SmackDown, the new tag team, or, you know, we want tag team champions, women's tag team champion signs. And I'm wondering, it almost seems like, because I would agree with everybody, I would love to see Asuka get a push. And I mean, you know, obviously she's been totally, you know, misused in her spot now. But they are really pushing that friendship angle with her. I mean, you notice even in the Battle Royal where the commentators went out of their way to say, oh, this bond, you know, between these two is so strong. You know, they're working together here, even in this situation. And so I feel like that's something they're going for. And maybe also the Bailey Sasha, maybe that's why they shut that down, was because maybe they do want to build some tag teams. I mean, obviously they have the Iconics in place and they could do some stuff. But gosh, I hope also, on another note, I'm sorry, I'm rambling on here. I would like to see, I hope they turn this Becky thing around. I mean, my gosh, she is just, I mean, you can't get any more over, you know, I mean, good Lord,
yeah.
Let's just
no doubt.
Make her a baby face, you know, I mean, my gosh. But I mean, how do you feel about the tag team situations?
Well, if there are going to be tag team titles, and from all accounts, there are going to be women's tag titles introduced at some point, and I don't know if that's two separate titles for Raw SmackDown or if it's going to be one floating title from SmackDown to Raw. But you're right. They do have tag teams in place right now. You've got Bayley and Sasha Banks. You've got the Riot Squad on Raw. You've got the Iconics on SmackDown. You've got Asuka and Naomi on SmackDown, who are starting to establish themselves. You know, you've got some teams there, and it would give another storyline to the women, because so many times, even with this women's evolution, there's only enough time, especially on SmackDown, which is a two-hour show, there's only enough time for one women's division storyline, and that's the storyline surrounding the SmackDown women's title. So if you're going to have or introduce another title, you know, people are going to complain, oh, just what we need, another title. But it would give them a reason to have a second women's storyline or a third, depending on what's going on that brand. So that's a plus as well. It gets more women involved in storylines, gets more women TV time. So I think that would be a positive too.
Yeah, that would be good. I hope they decide to do something with that, but only time will tell. Otherwise, I'd love to see this be a yearly or even more than once, you know, yearly event, because they did similar to, I mean, not exactly like a WrestleMania, but with the pre-show, with the package at the end that you mentioned was something you usually only see on, you know, the Big Four, the video package at the end. And, I mean, it would be a cool way to blow off, you know, some feuds in the women's divisions. Cause it was a good watch. And I never thought that anything was, you know, was filler, you know, even the six man and the tag team match at the beginning and the battle, it was all good. You know, it was all well worth the time. So, thanks for having me, man. I really enjoy the VIP programs. I listen all the time. I drive around a lot at work, and I pretty much run through all the podcasts that you guys put out, and it's I'm glad I spent the $9 or $10 or whatever. It's well worth it. So thanks for having me, and thanks for being there.
Excellent. Thank you, Derek. Appreciate the plug as well. PWTorch.com/goVIP. All kinds of VIP audio shows, Wade Keller Hotlines, Bruce Mitchell Audio, you know, just a cavalcade of audio shows that you can get with your membership to the VIP side of PWTorch.com. That will do it for us this week here on Wrestling Night in America. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining in on the conversation about WWE Evolution. Don't forget, we are here on Wrestling Night in America each and every Sunday night on PWTorchLivecast.com. Most Sundays we are here at 8 p.m. Eastern. Most Sundays I have a co-host with me talking about the big shows in professional wrestling. And, you know, we'll be here again, as I said earlier, we'll be here again next week at 8 p.m. Eastern. So please join us then. We'll be talking about Crown Jewel in the past tense. It hasn't happened yet, but by the time we're on the air next Sunday, it will have happened. And we'll be looking ahead. This has been a busy few months, not just in WWE. We've had Bound for Glory that aired a couple weeks ago. Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek took over Wrestling Night in America on that evening and did a great job recapping Bound for Glory. And, you know, just a lot of content here to talk about with WWE and with, as I said, Impact Wrestling and some of the other New Japan is out there. We're coming up on Wrestle Kingdom in January, so focus is going to turn to that as well coming down the pike. So, again, appreciate you listening, and we'll talk to you again next week here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.